Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear.
Welcome to this week's Inside the Hive. I'm Emily Jane Fox. I'm here with my co-host, Joe Hagan. Say hi, Joe.
Hi.
Well, another week has come and gone. Another week of our dear president slowly losing his mind and maybe inching towards losing an election. Joe, you and I were just talking before we press record about this interview he gave Michael Bender at the Wall Street Journal. It feels particularly unhinged. Is that right?
I would say it's as if the more the crazier things get, the more unhinged he becomes. And his inability to control the narrative has reached new lows. I wanted to say new highs, but the highs of the lows. He's reached peak low.
I mean, you say that, and I feel like every week for the last 5 years, we've said that Trump reaches peak low. I guess the reality is there is no bottom, or there has not yet been a bottom. I just think that over the last 4 months, as coronavirus has taken hold, as the economy has fallen into the depths of a recession, as the nation reckons with a very difficult, very important conversation about race and about the police system and about the justice system in this country, the conversation around the president has turned not just among people who have been raising the alarms about the president over the last 3.5 years, but amongst people who once did support him, amongst Republicans in the Senate and the House. It just feels like a different moment.
I agree with you about that. I have been, you know, reluctant to get too excited about it, but I do feel like we've turned a corner. And weirdly, I feel like the influence of Barack Obama, which has always been like far in the background during these Trump years, as Trump has made efforts to undo his works. You see this latest Supreme Court decision to preserve DACA, and there was an incredible, or really fascinating observation by Ronald Brownstein, the political analyst for The Atlantic and CNN, who was pointing out that Norman Mailer back in the early 60s predicted that JFK would sort of energize and ignite the scattered sentiments of social discontent that were gathering in the late 50s. And he's saying maybe history will say that Obama had done the same thing, that in fact, all the things that we thought Trump had undone were just reforming, and now they're coming back and they're not going to go away. I mean, the next generation is basically declaring it so. And now whether they translate that into votes this fall, we don't know, but certainly Trump has weakened himself in ways that, you know, how many days are we out from the election? 130 something a year. In my mind, I'm thinking what could happen? The worst thing that could happen is people forget. Right. That the news cycle, as we've known it over the last 4 years, begins to, you know, drain the energy out or the outrage, and Trump somehow figures a way to refashion himself. But so the question is whether or not he can do that. But as you are going to take us into this interview today with a Trump associate who can take us into the mind of Trump, we wonder whether or not his mind is going to be able to think strategically, come up with coherent narratives like he has in the past that are based on his gut or whatever else, to reinvent himself in time for November. And so that's the question we revolve around today.
That is exactly what I go into in this interview. I spoke with Sam Nunberg, who is a former Trump campaign official, a former Donald Trump advisor, and now someone who is just very plugged in all things Trump. And we just go right into Donald Trump's head, right into Donald Trump's campaign, what he has done wrong, the electoral map that Nunberg says just is not in his favor. And it's a fascinating conversation. Now, Sam's one of these people who became well known for his association with Donald Trump and is someone who many, many reporters pick his brain because he just has a deep understanding of who our president is as a person, as a campaigner, as a president, and is just really plugged in. So if you'll indulge us in about an hour of an interview with Sam Nunberg about what he thinks will happen over the next 5 months, about some of the decisions the president has botched over the last few weeks, it's a really fascinating look at what's to come. So let's get right to it. I am very excited today to be here with the man, the myth, the legend, Sam Nunberg, a former advisor to President Donald Trump when he was just Donald Trump. He was also an advisor on the Trump presidential campaign. He is now a consultant and a favorite touchstone of every political reporter under the sun. Sam, welcome.
Very excited. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a big day. We have a lot of things I want to ask you about, a lot of people I want to ask you about, a lot of news stories I want to ask you about, but I feel like I want to start with you talking about John Bolton's book because it is clearly on our president's mind this morning. It's on every news show. So what do you make of the book, the allegations in it, and our president's reactions to it?
Well, first of all, I believe everything in the book is accurate.
Why?
For two reasons. The first is, John Bolton is known as a vociferous note-taker. When I was in law school, I hosted him for the Federalist Society, and I asked him how he had such a quick turnaround on his book after he left the Bush administration, and he told me about all the notes that he takes, and his assistant told me the same thing. I've sat with him a couple times, and one of the things I always thought when he joined the Trump White House, I was in favor of him joining. Disclaimer, I agree with him, particularly on Iran. But I thought that here is someone who hopefully will enjoy getting a lot done that is on his agenda. However, I didn't know the way he would feel about seeing Donald Trump up close. And that's always an issue. You know, a lot of people agree with Donald Trump, and I agree with him, and I agree with his White House and his administration on a lot of issues. But behind the scenes, he is not a very flattering person to people like John Bolton, learned people that take policy extremely seriously, that believe in these issues. And right. Donald Trump is not somebody who is going to want to know what he doesn't believe he needs to know. He also is somebody who wants to operate under the ethos that he is smarter and just has this natural God-given ability to do anything better than anybody around him. And then particularly, there's another issue. John Bolton probably had more influence on Donald Trump when Sheldon Adelson wanted Bolton hired during those first couple of years of the presidency. John Bolton was frequently appearing on Fox. It was always a joke between Roger Stone and me. You have more influence from the outside on Donald than as opposed when you work on him. Sure. Everything that I have read from the public, I don't have the book. It sounds like Donald Trump to me. Now, here's a larger issue, Emily. Did he say this to President Xi? You got to help me with my reelection. Yes, he did. However, are you going to judge Trump administration actions versus Donald Trump themselves? And if we have to go and give a comparative to Joe Biden, who we can get into, had a failed record when he was given that portfolio by President Obama. So there's my take on it.
So I don't know that you gave the answer to what he said to you when you said, how did you write that book so quickly? What was his answer? Because he had taken notes?
And Bolton said to me that he takes, it's very easy. He takes very good contemporaneous notes he told me, you know, when I was in law school, budding, very active in the Federalist Society, but I wasn't in a very prestigious law school. He said, the best thing you can do as well, and this was in regards to the notes, was always remember details, Sam. Always remember details. And that was one of the reasons why, in light of the Bush book, which, you know, he had a lot of enemies for that Bush book. Bush didn't like Bolton at the end. But, you know, Bolton, I agreed with the Bush book. He criticized Condoleezza Rice and Bush for their handling of Israel, the Israel-Lebanon Hezbollah war in 2007 at the UN. So the short answer is that also sounds a lot to me, yeah, like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And John Bolton also, Emily, is in a position where he has nothing to lose anymore. Sure. He wasn't going to get re-signed by Fox at $400,000 a year after he left the Trump administration. Wasn't going to happen. He gets this book deal, and this book deal pays for 20 years of the Fox News contract, and he wants to write history. I've also heard from people that talked to him, that were friendly with him, that helped him get the job, that when he left the administration, he was particularly worried about the president leaving NATO, things like that. So, I mean, this is stuff that contemporaneously makes a lot of sense when you hear, and you know, you say, I talk to political reporters. Well, look, I don't pretend to have a good relationship with Donald. I don't pretend that Donald likes me, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm very well respected by a lot of people in the administration. I talk to a lot of them, and these are events that I was familiar with, some of them, from what I've read.
So you're not surprised by the content of it, and I have not gotten a copy of the book yet.
Sorry, but let's be clear. I don't have the book either. Yeah. Basing it on everything I've read in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal.
So all the fake news sources is what you're saying.
Yeah,
very fake. Well, I haven't read the book. The accounts that I have read from those outlets feel to me to be more confirming than revelatory, which is important in and of itself. These are things that we should note for our sitting president to have done or allegedly done or said to people who were fastidious note takers, as you have said. What I keep thinking about this morning, and as I saw the interview with Sean Hannity last night, and I just read an interview he did with the Wall Street Journal about many things, but he talked about Bolton's book, and I was looking at the president's Twitter feed this morning. He has this this pattern of tweeting about anyone who writes a book about him or anyone who's worked in his White House or the Trump Organization who says anything negatively about him publicly. And that person is always a dummy, an idiot, a liar, a coffee boy, someone who knows nothing. And it begs the question of why is he hiring all these dummy, low-life, lying coffee boys to work in his administration or his company? And if they're all so stupid, why were they hired in the first place?
You know, somebody, a mutual friend of mine who knows Donald very well, who works in the Yankee organization, we were talking once about how Donald and George Steinbrenner are extremely similar.
Mm.
This person was talking about how Trump had frequently rehired me, and he was telling me that he had visited Trump in the White House and mentioned me, and Trump, you know, looked down but said, well, Sam's very smart and talented. And nothing ever ends well with him, with these relationships, you know, and it depends on the character of the person. So, for instance, let's go into this. Let's talk. I work for Donald Trump from 2011 to mid-2015. I am literally the first campaign hire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm forced out within 6 weeks. I am then fired. He tells me that he's going to keep it quiet. I immediately start getting phone calls from reporters that Corey Lewandowski was calling.
Mm.
And now he called me a low-level part-time consultant. I wrote the script for him that he used long after I was supporting Ted Cruz that helped him get the nomination.
Mm.
And it's just this idea that once things are over, you know, it has to be that he won and you couldn't, you know, work under, you couldn't fit the bill for him.
Yeah.
And he likes to end things terribly. And I think part of it is his narcissism. Part of it is the fact that this is his business profile that he's created. He's the one who fires people.
Right.
And part of it is, and let me give you a good example. You know, when I worked for him, I never signed an NDA up until I started working as the first hire. I remember Rona Graf bringing it down to me on the 24th floor from 26. I didn't even look at it I just signed it.
Which is crazy because you're a lawyer.
Fine. But in hindsight, I had never done anything to Donald.
Yeah.
In hindsight, when I said, you know, I realized the reason he wanted me to sign now was because he's been through this before, and he always envisions that at the end of the day, he's going to fire you, treat you like dirt, or things will always end badly. And they don't have to end badly.
Mm.
That's what he likes to do. And, you know, he suffers the consequences. We can get into me, but I will tell you, in a nutshell, I cost him over $35 million because he fired me. And I'm proud of that. And he learned his lesson. And I'll tell you something else. Had he not fired me, had Roger Stone not quit, guess what, Donald, you asshole? You would have had the nomination done after you had won Florida.
Mm.
Instead, you wanted to listen to Chris Christie. You wanted to have Corey Lewandowski and Hope Hicks take dictation. And you had to spend an extra $40 million of a lot of cash you don't have on to get that nomination. That thing should have been closed and wound up pretty quickly.
Well, what's crazy to me is that you did cost him all this money, and yet you have not been excommunicated from people who serve him, who work for him, and even from the president himself. When's the last time you talked to him?
It was the day he called me, the day that he kicked out Pelosi from the White House because she said cover up.
Mm.
I believe that's last year.
Mm.
That time last year. And before that, I had not spoken to him since mid 2017. I didn't talk to him all of 2016.
Wow.
You know, I do want to, we can go into, you know, I do have some scores to settle. I'll tell this to the audience.
Yeah, so please.
Going to my getting fired. But I think that.
Wait, were you surprised to see his number when he called you?
I'm sorry, what?
Were you surprised to see him calling you? You pick up, you see your phone, you see a number, you see it's Trump. Was that surprising to you?
Yes and no. I know that he thinks that, I know my limitations, unlike other people, and I'm very smart and I'm very good at this. And frankly, it's his loss and the Republican Party's loss that I'm not working in this field anymore. And I know what I can do and what I can't do. And he called me, and we discussed Biden, and we discussed what was going on generally. And I told him I believe that he was going to get impeached. I think this would have been before the impeachment, correct?
Mm, yeah.
And I said, you're going to get impeached. She is not your friend. You are going to get impeached.
Mm.
I remember saying that to him. And
what did he say?
On the one hand, in the beginning, I was. You know, it was nice to hear from him. But then I'll tell you one thing. The conversation sort of ended when I said, you know what I'm happy to see, Mr. President? He said, what? I'm happy to see you're hiring all these people for your campaign. You know, you paid me nothing when I worked for you.
Mm.
That may be my fault, but I'm happy to see you actually can treat people well because I didn't know that.
Mm.
And I'm happy that all these people working for you are the people that we were fighting against for you, for your nomination, people that didn't want to take you seriously, you know? And that's really where the conversation ended. And I didn't suspect that I was going to hear from him again unless I called the White House.
Right.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, my position on Donald is, first of all, I wholeheartedly support President Trump being reelected. Elections to me, as somebody that knows his business, we can argue about this. They're about they're ultimately about 3,000 appointments in the executive branch. And judicial appointments.
Right.
And who would you rather have people working there? And that's just the fact. And that's why you need to come home whoever wins the nomination.
Well, the president this morning tweeted about how if you don't reelect him or you need to reelect him because there are Supreme Court seats up for grabs and the Second Amendment is paramount. And if you don't reelect him, then you're going to get your guns taken away.
Yeah. And he'll get, I don't know if that expands. He's got a different problem with this election. But that'll help him get back to that 46.5% he got in 2016. But he can't win on 46.5%.
I want to talk. I want to talk math with you later. Continue.
And so I want to be very clear. I have no sour grapes about not working in the White House. I have no sour grapes about not working on this cycle. In the natural order of things, I wouldn't. But I'll tell you one thing, Donald. You know, I'm never getting 2015 and 2016 back. And I know what I know. I know what I don't know. I know when I'm responsible for things. And I deserve to be treated better than I was. And I'll be dealing with people. Look, they're not, look, people that I can't really deal with to get back at them right now. Donald's not going to be around forever. And frankly, it looks like he's not going to be around next year in the Oval Office, right? At least right now. So, I'm not forgetting about that either. But correct, going, as you were saying about that tweet, look, the Supreme Court is up for grabs because not only is it Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but Clarence Thomas is also the second oldest, I believe,
yep.
late 70s.
Yep.
So the same way people, Democrats and my friends on the left, pray every day for her health, we're going to be praying every day for Clarence Thomas's health should Biden get elected.
Can we talk about the math as you were just bringing up? You seem to be pessimistic about the president's chance for reelection, or maybe it's realistic. What do you see happening in the next 5 months? Where do you think the swing states play out? What's your read of the polls as they start to come in 5 months out from this election?
Well, we can go over the map, but let's talk about the president.
Okay.
He's done absolutely nothing to expand his base. A couple polls that I trust, when I worked during the midterms, what we saw was at the height of the president's approval rating in the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, one of the best public polls, I think he hit around 48%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are no serious third-party candidates. The other side has done an extremely good job for a couple reasons. Some of it naturally because Bernie Sanders has nowhere to go and needs a legacy this time. They get along with Biden much better. But there aren't going to be any real third-party candidates in the Libertarian. And I don't even know who the nominee is. And I don't believe the fourth party, as you call them, or other party candidates such as Jill Stein are going to be a factor. So you have to look at Donald. He's not going to win the popular vote. That's gone.
Mm.
And frankly, people in the White House would tell me that doesn't matter because he can get the Electoral College. But the reality is if he doesn't hit, 48.5% is the best case, I would say, nationally. He ain't going to win. And what I think is, here's what works for Donald. The first thing is that in Florida, in Ohio, in Iowa, and in Wisconsin, he typically polls higher than his national average.
Mm.
And he does from his national fave unfavor, his national number against Biden, it's always higher in those states. So he has room to grow. On the other hand, he's losing votes and he has done nothing to regain some of the votes that he's having a trouble losing, particularly college educated women
yep.
that voted Republican, the so-called suburban, exurban mom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a major problem for him. And I think seniors could be a problem. Somebody extremely smart to me said something last night. I'm not going to take credit for this. I didn't think of this. Look, they lose seniors. They're done.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, Republicans are done. They lose seniors. Somebody said to me, you know, the seniors are the ones most frightened about COVID.
Of course.
And if you're going, okay, we agree. But if you're going out and rallying and doing campaigns and, you know, even if people are wearing masks, seniors aren't going to like that.
No. And you're having these rallies where you're bringing tens of thousands of people into an indoor arena where masks are not required, as the press secretary said in a press conference this week. That is a recipe for disaster. You have the Tulsa officials begging residents not to go to this thing. But the only flip side to the argument you just made, and I think about it all the time, is that seniors are the group that is obviously most concerned about coronavirus and less likely to support the president because of that. But they're also, if they're going to be concerned about coronavirus, maybe they're less likely to vote in this election because they're scared to go to a polling place. And there's no real system for voting by mail yet in the United States. So I think, yes, he could turn seniors off. But the real question is, are fewer seniors going to be able to vote, period, in this election?
The dirty little secret is the more people vote, the more likely Republicans lose.
Of course.
That's a fact.
Of course.
Now, if seniors aren't coming out to vote, that's a win for Biden in any event anyway. Because that's a demo that the Republicans strongly rely on, and Donald has a can usually get them out. Going back to the map, so he got 306 electoral votes. I mean, they all didn't vote for him, fine, but he got 306 electoral votes. Michigan is gone. Michigan is
gone. To the Democrats.
It's gone.
Yeah.
They are not going to be able to advance the map and to grow out their map. So let's be honest. Nevada, right? Not happening. New Hampshire, not going to happen. It's just not. And I think partly because Biden, Northeastern candidate, stronger connection, and New Hampshire voters are split ticket voters. And they may like their governor, but there's something, you know, Donald will do better in that state than his national average, but I don't see it. Remember, he won Maine one last time. That's an electoral vote. I don't think he's winning that this time. Now, his path to 270, I don't give him Pennsylvania either, even with Biden being against fracking and being against the Second Amendment, and also with Catholics. I don't think Trump can win that, but he still, on paper, has a path to 270. And the path would be he wins the South minus Virginia, wins the South, but you include, technically it's in the Southwest, but you would include Arizona. I believe he will win at North Carolina. And you're giving him Florida. He wins Ohio. He wins Iowa. And he pulls out Wisconsin. Wisconsin is more like Ohio and Iowa than it is like Michigan. And there you could see that. Look at Scott Walker.
Yeah.
Barely lost in a wave Democrat year, barely lost his fourth term, his fourth statewide election. So you could see that path, but that path is narrow. Now, go to Arizona. If I'm Trump, I'm very worried about Arizona. Let's remember about 2016 a couple things. First of all, Donald won Florida, Iowa, Arizona, Wisconsin. Those are states that he won where the Republican Senate candidates got more votes than him. The only state where he won where a Republican Senate candidate won was Pennsylvania, that he got more votes than Toomey. And he had a lot of factors helping him, plus the fact that the Kochs, while they weren't going to support Trump, they were going to support the Senate, and they spent a lot of money, and that money helps uptick it no matter what, because a statewide Senate race is equivalent to the presidential.
Right.
I don't see, the money is controlled now by the RNC and the Trump campaign. NRSC and the NRCC aren't raising the amounts that I think they would like to raise, projected or claiming that they were going to raise, particularly the NRCC.
Yep.
And those 40 districts that went in 2008 that flipped for Trump from Republicans to Democrats, I don't see it. You'd have to look deep down, and I haven't yet, and I haven't seen the candidates. But, I mean, a lot of those came from New Jersey. A lot of those came from California. I don't see us winning those back. So it's really an uphill battle.
This is Inside the Hive.
Hey, Jon Favreau here. There's no shortage of political takes in 2024, but quantity doesn't cut it. We need a better conversation about the latest biggest election of our lives. On Pod Save America, me and my co-hosts cut through the noise to help you figure out what matters and how you can help. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, Pod Save America is breaking down the political news that makes us laugh, cry, and snap our laptops in half. Expensive year for laptops. Make sure to check out new episodes of Pod Save America on your favorite podcast platform or our YouTube channel now.
The campaign has not released its May fundraising numbers yet, and I'm very curious to see what has happened over that period of time, particularly because I feel like I know that people in the media say this all the time, but I really mean this when I say it. This feels like the most chaotic time of his 3 years in office to me, this past stretch of months, and particularly, I think it's probably because the stakes are just so high right now. With the Mueller investigation, the integrity of elections was at stake, and that's obviously incredibly important. But we're in the midst of a life-threatening global pandemic, an economic meltdown that could have ramifications for years and years and years and years to come. We are in a pivotal moment when it comes to race in this country. And our president has just floundered in leadership. And for the last few months, I don't think that the vast majority of even his supporters feel like this has been a very good stretch for our president. And coupled with what you were just saying about the fact that he hasn't done anything to expand his base over the last 3.5 years, it seems to me like maybe he doesn't want to win again. He's had a long stretch of time to appeal to a broader swath of voters across the country. He's had a very pivotal moment where he could have risen, he could have spoken to the nation that was so desperate for leadership over the past few months. And in both of those instances, he just hasn't done what he needed to do in order to really set himself up for re-election in November. And I just have to think, maybe he doesn't want the gig anymore.
It's an interesting question. You know, I know there are a lot of people that are saying that behind the scenes, particularly Republican senators in competitive races, races that shouldn't be competitive either. I don't believe Donald Trump will ever want to lose an election. I certainly don't think Donald Trump necessarily enjoys the presidency, enjoys the job. I had always said that Donald Trump will love getting elected president. I don't know if he'd like being president. Mm. For him, it wasn't something that he wanted to discuss. I'm quoted to in the New York Times about this. He would go over the minutiae of anything related to the campaign, related to delegates, related to primary and caucus schedules, related to updates on the convention rules. But, you know, he wasn't into the policy briefings.
Yeah.
He was into the campaign from a marketing point of view, or he wasn't into, you know, at least when I worked there, we was very early on, but the idea that, you know, you were going to get him to talk about, you know, even saying something along the lines of when I take the oath, I will, you know, lines like that weren't going to work. He wouldn't approve those. He was, and it is what it is, but you know what? It worked for him. There was a great story. Something I learned from Donald when I worked for him was, remember sitting with him, and I think the issue was something along the lines, we were talking about a Second Amendment issue, and I maybe did give him a word salad, or I wasn't quite that clear about it. But I remember saying to him something along, but I remember saying, well, you got to know this. And he goes, you know, he said to me, you know, Sam, you tell me things in a way that I can't even repeat it. How the hell am I supposed to communicate it and sell it? And it actually helped me. It was a great lesson in life. You know, he changed the dynamic of that last race. That last race, if you wanted to go wonky, the Republican primary, you weren't voting for us, but that was fine. And you know what? He was right and I was wrong. We didn't have to really, at the end of the day, worry so much about what he didn't know, because he was able to dominate. He was able to dominate, and all he had to say was where he genuinely stood on the issues. Heading now, one thing I'd always thought, Emily, was, and I said this, you know, even the first year, I may even mention it to you, I said I could always see him wanting to win his second term, winning the second term, but maybe leaving after 6 years.
Mm.
That's what I could say.
Why?
Right?
Oh, so that he would get the win, but not have to serve out the whole term, is that right?
Right. He's not a lame duck.
Right.
He's not sitting around, you know, he's out to go live his life again.
That's interesting.
He's leaving it from VP Mike Pence as president. He can give a rationale where he says, you know, past presidents have not been able to serve the American people well. Everybody looks and they don't want to get things done, Congress. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a first-term president right now. Judge Mike, reelect Mike, something along those lines. I'd always thought that was a possibility. I'm sure he likes sitting in the White House. I'm sure there are things like that he enjoys, but there are other days where I'm sure he wishes he was at Trump Tower and then going in his plane down to Mar-a-Lago.
Sure,
right?
Sure. I mean,
it's just like he had a life. He was an emperor.
Yeah.
In his past life.
Yeah. That's, I mean, Michael Cohen always says that if Trump loses, he's worried that he won't leave, that he won't peacefully hand over the White House. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's something that you also feel. But it's very hard for me to think of him staying in a race if he thinks he's going to lose. I just can't see him continuing to go on with a campaign that feels doomed this time around. I know that everyone was sort of feeling that the first go around. I just can't imagine him putting himself in that situation.
I think something that he believes, and he could be right, and I think it is going to help him. Look, Joe Biden's able to run as a generic Democrat right now. I do give Joe Biden a lot of credit for placing that phone call to Donald, to the president. If I had worked for the president, I would have begged him not to take it, not to say he still wouldn't. Mm. Joe Biden bought himself time, was able to raise a lot of money, and now has a national TV campaign. Yep. He's ready to go, and he's ready to run a presidential campaign. With the Trump campaign committed political malpractice because they didn't take advantage, even during COVID, even during the daily press conferences, there was no reason why they didn't spend $60, $75 million of their own money on TV daily, just hitting Biden, just trying to set the parameters, set what the agenda is for this presidential race. I'll never understand it. I understand digital is valuable. But, you know, when I read that Brad and Jared like to talk to Karl Rove, that scares me. Karl Rove is stale. Karl Rove, we're not going to win with the Karl Roves and the Stuart Stevens, the Michael, the Steve Schmitz, the Lincoln Project, those people, not Karl, obviously, Bush won re-election, but one of the reasons Donald was able to win, and one of the reasons we looked outside the box, and one of the reasons I was able to get a senior job with having a resume that, you know, it was pretty light, was because I saw the way the game was played in 2008 and 2012. I saw Steve Schmidt. I saw Nicole Wallace. I saw Stuart Stevens. These were supposedly the big geniuses. And you know what they like to do as Republicans? They'd rather lose respectfully than win a dirty, disgusting campaign. And I hate to break it to you, the other side doesn't. We were no longer the Lee Atwaters, right? Our people sucked. And don't get me wrong, you know, I look at that Lincoln Project, it's funny. Steve Schmidt wanted to be hired by Trump. John Weaver called me, was interested in being hired by Trump before Kasich called him. You know, Stuart Stevens, Stuart hated Donald, didn't want Donald part of the Romney campaign, even though, and this is a fact, Donald helped Mitt beat Rick Santorum. Don't believe me, believe Ann Romney in 2012 when she thanks Donald. In Ohio and in Wisconsin.
How things have changed.
So the point is that these are pissed off people that are losers. And they don't like the fact that we, even though I wasn't part of it at the end, I mean, I did a lot for it, we were able to change the way the game was, and we didn't play by their rules.
But those Lincoln Project ads are killer now, don't you think?
They're fine. I mean, they're fine. But once again, here's the real problem. Where is the Trump campaign spending this goddamn money? I don't care about fucking, can I say fucking or no?
Say it.
I don't care about fucking Facebook ads. I don't care about going on the website and doing the Trump survey. Why, when I turn on the TV, do I not see Trump ads, even from New York City? Why are they not on the cable station?
Well, why are they getting it wrong? They
your money on. I don't get it. You know, and once again, you don't talk to Karl Rove. The model is, and David Axelrod figured this because we lifted a lot of stuff from Barack Obama 2008. The model is you want to follow the Axelrod David Plouffe model from 2012. What did they do? They beat Romney to a pulp when Romney didn't have the money, right? Instead, Trump is taking calls from Joe Biden like he's his friend, saying, I don't want to leak out the call. We had agreed. I mean, well played by Joe. That was very well played by Joe. But once again, things will change. I want this audience to understand something. Whether you like Donald or not, whether you're going to vote for Donald or you think he needs to lose, you don't have a great candidate on your side. Mm. Even with everything going on here, even with this, even with, you know, the public consensus that Trump has not done a good job on COVID, the public consensus that the economy is, and we are, is in a recession.
Mm-hmm.
Not as if Joe Biden's above 50% national favorability. He is a generic Democrat now. Donald Trump will win those debates against Joe Biden. He will. Now, the media may not say it, but he will. And he'll be saying what everybody else is thinking. And even with Anita Dunn, who I think did a masterful job of Biden, particularly in 2012, mm-hmm. I think she's one of the smartest people in the business.
Totally agree.
Even with her coaching Joe, I remember her giving an interview to David Plouffe on his podcast. I hate to talk about a competitor's.
Please, but, it's a great podcast.
Saying that we anticipate that Biden will do better in one-on-one debates, and he did very well against Bernie. Even then, I think Trump will do well. And if I was working for Donald, my worry would be beat Joe, beat him in the debate, but don't look like you're killing an old man.
Mm, like he did with Hillary on stage?
Don't make it seem as if people want to say, okay, stop it. That would be my worry on it. But I think that one of the reasons Trump was elected was an Obama-Biden record. And Biden had a lot to do with that record. And where I will defend Donald 100% is his foreign policy. I think it's been, in the most ways, a success. And I know a lot of people don't agree with that. That's fine. But I'll tell you, I like where Iran is today as opposed to where they were in 2017 before he took the oath of office.
Mm.
I like where China is today nationally as opposed to where they were when he took the oath of office. They were ready to take over and be the world superpower, particularly in GDP. That's not happening now.
But Sam, most people are not going to the poll in November in the middle of a pandemic and an economic recession and voting on foreign policy. You're a different breed because you're an ideologue who has a set of principles, and you're not hurting right now. You're God willing, you're healthy, and you're in an economic situation that is okay. But most people across this country don't have the luxury of sitting here and saying, ideologically, I agree with you on foreign policy, so that's where I'm going to cast my vote.
Well, that's true too. Trump's got to make the argument. Did you like the economy under me before this, force de majeure? Did you? Or do you like Joe Biden? Do you like the way Joe Biden and his VP? I'm somebody who I told you, I thought Elizabeth Warren was going to be a very strong nominee.
Totally.
I thought summer of 2019, she was talking about in a way, even if Trump had a very good economy, she would be able to beat it. And then she decided to release that healthcare program. That healthcare policy, which was the end of her campaign.
I remember when you told me that she was one of the scariest threats to Trump world.
She was, because she is talking to younger people who are the ninja generation, right? No income, no assets. We're debtors, our generation. X, Y, and Z. I don't know, Emily, if I'm still one of those yet. I'm going to be 39.
You're a millennial. You are squarely a millennial.
But, we graduate. We have a ton of debt.
Mm-hmm.
If we live in major cities, it's not like our parents. We can't really save. We're paying higher astronomical rents.
Right.
But we're never buying an apartment. And we have to pay off our bills. And I think that the school, that was a very smart take. And that was something... economic populism that I think, let's talk, everybody wants to talk about 2020, and we need to, it's the election, but it's going to be really interesting 2024 too. Either way, whoever wins, whether it's Biden or Trump, and it's likely Biden, at least right now, man, that is a terrible situation to inherit. And going back to your other question about, does Trump really want to win? Maybe one of the reasons he's not looking forward to a second term is a second term in 2021, being president in 2021, I would argue is going to be worse than Barack Obama in 2009. Because this coronavirus, I work in this industry now. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately now Americans, we deal with it differently, but I do, but I'm working in foreign markets, and when you have top-down governments that own the hospitals and everything, things are just going to be shut down.
Yeah.
they're just going to be shut down, and this thing is not going to stop. And it's also right, and it's also very sad too, because what do we do about kids that aren't going to school, right?
Totally.
They're trying to remote learn.
The repercussions are sweeping. They're huge, and they're sweeping. If we think about the campaign for one more beat, and then I want to move on to other things, but do you think he should fire Brad? Do you think he should inch Jared over or off the campaign? What should he do in the next 5 months to get things going and increase his chances?
Look, the short answer is I don't think Jared or Brad should be fired. I don't think they disclaimer from a selfish point of view, I like Jared being in power because my enemies aren't in power, the people I despise.
Name your enemies.
Lewandowski. Lewandowski will never have a real role with Jared and Brad there. But the real reason is Bill Stepien was always going to be the campaign manager, and I told you this. You can disclose this if I told you it off the record, whatever. The only reason Stepien wasn't, named co-campaign manager or senior advisor was because he was in the White House at the time they named Brad. And he's very talented, very smart. I have a lot of respect for him. Never spoke to him once in my life, by the way. But I think that from what I hear, that's not the issue. The issue ultimately is the president is his own strategist, and he is not going to change. And he's going to go out the way he wants to go out. If he doesn't want to adapt, he will die. Mm. If it's a stone rule, a Roger Stone rule. If you fight the last war, you lose. Mm. And that's really where they lost, frankly, going back to, we watched one of the most horrific things I've seen in George Floyd's murder. That was a modern day lynching. Mm. You're watching cops standing there, people asking the cops to stop, and they murder someone. And they murdered someone over a nonviolent crime. Mm-hmm. What did he do? Bounce a check?
Yeah.
And they, I think Trump addressed it this week better. I'm very glad Jason Miller has rejoined the campaign. He's an extremely smart strategist, communication person. I think, the issue isn't, and they didn't address this because we weren't living in 1960. And I want to explain this very quickly. Law and order was great for us in the beginning, in 2015. One of the things Roger and I did do, by the way, is we didn't give Donald a lot of the stuff we wanted him to use until when he was about to announce, because we didn't want to make it stale. Mm. And I said to Roger 2 weeks in, I said, can you give him a phone call about the silent majority? And he did. Mm. And it worked. And we were dealing with issues as a silent majority, the Republican and independent voters against the two-party establishment that, wanted these terrible trade deals, wanted to import undereducated, low-skilled people, that we weren't having wage growth. People were desperate for a change, and it worked then. But in 1968, Nixon was running, and he talked about law and order because after LBJ had passed the Great Society legislation, had passed bills that had to be passed on race, Americans with three stations and four major newspapers turned on their TVs, and liberal California, they saw lots being burned down by African Americans, and the liberal California, which had gone to LBJ. That's not what happened here. That is not what happened here. And the way he should have done it, he would have been better served two ways. The first thing is he doesn't like the fact that people knew that he went into this bunker.
Right.
That's Donald.
Why is he so upset about that?
It's a separate, he thinks it makes him look weak. But okay. Here's the deal. He should not have gone to that church with a Bible, nice call, Hope Hicks. He should have gone out with Melania, with Barron, at around 8:30 at night and thanked the police for securing that area. And that would have made him look, it would have made him look in a different light.
How do you get to the point where, I agree that would have been a much more effective visual than holding a Bible upside down outside of a church where no one asked him to go.
I was having a brain freeze. I was having a Joe Biden brain freeze. It would have made him look sympathetic.
Charming. I think that I just don't understand how you get to a place where that is the move that you choose. And reportedly, it was something that Hope Hicks had waved to him. It was something that Ivanka Trump had suggested might be a good move for him. Is it just that his instincts are off and the people around him have poor instincts as well?
Both, yeah. I'd agree with that. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you're dealing with anybody that is really good at this.
Mm.
People can say whatever they want about Roger Stone, and I don't really have a relationship with Roger anymore. Roger hates me. I don't know why, but it is what it is. Roger's a genius. Roger is one of the smartest men I've ever met, and from a marketing point of view, at least before the smaller thing happened, from a campaign point of view. And the right call would have been from the very beginning to say, I am going to address these issues. What happened with George Floyd should not have happened. I agree, you know, I want the First Amendment. I agree with the First Amendment. You are allowed to protest. However, you looters who are ruining this moment, who are taking advantage of this moment, I will deal with very harshly with extreme prejudice. And that would have been the way to do it. It's called nuance. Donald doesn't do nuance. It's, you know, he can't do nuance. Everything is slogans, themes, and it's not going to work anymore. He has to realize this is two analogies. This is season 6 of Apprentice. Ratings are down. People aren't as interested anymore. And it's, what can you do for me? What are you going to deliver me? Why should I still watch this? Why should I still give my time watching this? And, or I'll give another analogy. You know, in 2016, it was exciting. It was sexy. It was different. Let's send this disruptive force. He's saying what we like. He's against Hillary Clinton. He's the private businessman. You know, DC really needs to be shaken up. It needs to be taken to the boardroom. That's fine. It's like a relationship. You know, you start this great relationship. It's exciting those first couple of years,
mm-hmm.
but then after that, it's a commitment. And do you want to stay in there for that?
Right.
What have you done for me? What can you do?
Mm.
And here's his problem. He is not. He doesn't have a point of view where he can say, here is how I will govern and get things done for you going forward. Here's how I can build a consensus, even with Nancy, if she's still speaker. Here's what I will get done. He doesn't, you know what I mean? That's,
you're totally right.
He's going to be able to adapt to and really talk about how he's going to lead and what can he do. And that's frankly, if he's losing to Joe Biden on that, that's pretty pathetic. I mean, now, I'm somebody who has hated Joe Biden since the Bork days. I was young then, but I mean, I'm a policy guy when it comes to federalism. So you're not talking to somebody that likes Joe Biden or thinks Joe Biden's a moderate, and he's not. In any of those moderate but so-called positions he had before, he doesn't have them anymore. Case in point, the Hyde Amendment. But Joe can talk about governing. Donald still can't. And Donald's got to get with it. He's got to get with it on that.
As the head of the government, it's a pretty stunning thing. You brought up Roger Stone a few times, and I have to ask you, do you think that Trump is going to pardon him?
I don't know why he hasn't already. You know, it's very interesting. I was upset with Roger because, first of all, let me tell you what I believe. I believe, and I've said this publicly, I believe Michael Cohen, I believe Donald Rogers spoke about WikiLeaks. But here's the deal. It doesn't matter because there was no criminal conspiracy. What is the worst thing that will happen had Donald pardoned Roger? In fact, Donald is stupid for not pardoning Roger because if I'm Joe Biden, he has not pardoned Roger yet. I will say on the debate stage, you lied and your guy was convicted of lying for you. What's the response to that? What is the response to that?
So why don't you think he has? Why hasn't he done it?
My understanding, Mark Meadows is right now doesn't want it done.
Mm.
Mark Meadows doesn't like, Mark Meadows is a bossy guy. He doesn't like, Roger. You know, one of the reasons Stepien was promoted was because, earlier in that week, Meadows had arranged for Lewandowski and Bossy to go talk to Donald to tell him he's losing. Bossy's then that Sunday is going to golf with Donald, and unbeknownst to Meadows, Jared beat him. Jared's a very smart knife fighter and said, let's promote Bill.
Mm.
By the way, Bill's smarter than Bossy. Mm. And so they don't like it. You know, I'm never really going to say why Bossy doesn't like Roger. But if Dave knows, I know the real reason why he doesn't like
What's
Roger.
What's the real reason?
I'm not. I've said it to you privately. I'm not going to say it publicly.
Come on.
It's not nice for David's family. I'll put it to you that
okay.
way.
Okay.
Well, let me say this. David's wife worked for Roger as his secretary in the Black Manafort Stone days. And I won't go into it after that.
Okay. Okay. Sam, I have a couple more quick questions for you. I really like all this, all the gossip. talk to me about Mary Trump's book. What do we know? What are we excited to read? What do you think the president's reaction is going to be as we prepare for this book to be published? Is there going to be a lawsuit? What's your read?
I think as opposed to the Bolton book, this book really hits home. Mm-hmm. Look, in the 26th, did you ever see Donald's office on the 26th floor?
I've never been in the office, no.
Okay. On the 26th floor, you had pictures all over the office. The largest picture was for Fred Trump. President held his father in great reverence, talked about his father frequently to me. Would talk about how proud his father would even be, and he'd say the word proud to me. So if it's true, it's publicly reported that Mary Trump claims that he was saying bad things about his father, he's not going to like that. Remember, he sued Bill Barr for insulting his father.
Right.
It's going to hit home too because it really goes into something Donald hates, which is that he wasn't self-made. And it lifts the veneer of the Trump brand that he's built. Do I think he'll sue her? First of all, I don't know if they have an NDA.
Yeah.
I think if he was sitting in Trump Tower, he would sue her.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy thing to think about suing one's own niece and having your niece sign an NDA. It's a wild notion. Talking about another book and about NDAs, there is a new book about Melania Trump. And I think that the juiciest revelation from the book seems to be that the First Lady delayed her move to Washington so that she could renegotiate her prenuptial agreement. Does that ring true to you?
That's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I don't know that part. We've always heard these rumors. I always thought it wasn't a surprise to me that she wanted to keep Barron in school. I don't want to get, you know, something, I know Donald doesn't appreciate it, but there are two things. First of all, I could say Donald's an asshole and theoretically still be friendly with him.
Right.
2 years from now. I never talk about his business. I never talk about his kids. I never really talk about his private life. But what I would say is schooling of Barron and parenting of Barron was something that Donald frequently called his wife about.
Mm.
Anything I saw, she wore the pants. That's what I would say.
Mm.
Dinner's ready. He would leave the office, go up to the penthouse.
Mm.
Some things that don't seem true to me, I had heard that she wanted Chris Christie as VP.
Right.
Not Mike Pence. Now it says that she wanted Pence. I don't know. I've never spoken to her about it, but general consensus, you're reporting, I think you heard the opposite, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's obviously cooperated with this book. And I can understand, but when I hear that she was concerned that if Donald isn't around, how Barron would be treated, that would make sense to me, but I don't want to go into it anymore.
Yeah. That's fair. Sam, I have one last question for you. If you were a betting man and you had to bet on what happens on November 3rd, 2020, where are you putting your money and where are you putting your vote?
I'm voting for the president.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean I won't enjoy watching Donald lose if he loses.
Okay. Do you think he's going to lose?
I'll put it to you. If it was today, he would lose.
Okay.
I advise stakeholders on this. You have to look at it today that he would lose, but it doesn't mean that he still can't win.
Right.
Biden is a weak candidate, and we can talk all now. Everything has been focused on Donald, but he's not going to play by the rules anymore that have been set out by COVID. He's going to be doing the rallies. He's going to talk about opening up. I don't think that's a popular thing if Biden wants to stay closed. Whether we should or we shouldn't is not the issue, right? What do Americans want? And, do they want to, you know, have the, you know what I mean, not be able to work? I don't know. I side on us not wanting, not Americans not wanting to be controlled by government in general. So that's me. Donald, once again, has to get to 49% to be able to get over 270. He's nowhere near that now. He's lost a lot of time on the advantages that he had as an incumbent president. As I've always said, though, and I said to you, and I mean it, I've worked for him and I've believed in him when nobody else believed in him. And I've fought against him and I've been his adversary as well. Never underestimate Donald Trump. And I'm not talking about Russia, China. I'm going to be very clear. Never underestimate that Donald Trump can have one of the greatest comebacks ever. And he could. But if he wins, this will be more of a miracle than the last one in 2016. Mm. I think more likely that Biden wins. It doesn't mean I want that to happen. And I don't think Biden will be a very good president either.
Well, that's a very hopeful note for us to end on. I really appreciate your always sunny disposition.
Right? I didn't give any. Hey, Emily, did I give any of the political answers? I don't think so. Right?
No, I think that you are very true to who you are. You're very true to why I call you, why so many people call you.
Tell a story. We got close.
Okay, let's.
Can I tell you,
please?
So I decided, so the audience knows I've been public about this. I celebrated 2 years of sobriety in April.
Amazing, Sam.
I've been in and out of those rooms forever, and I finally decided it was time to take care of it. You have to come to that decision. But in any event, I'm in rehab in Antigua at Eric Clapton's place. And I just met Emily about her book, and she was working on. But she's very smart, and she was totally plugged in and knew everything. And from Philadelphia, Jewish, and no, I wasn't trying to pick her up. We were just friends, but she was funny to talk to. So I'm literally, there were three people I'm calling as I stole my cell phone while I was in rehab. And I was calling Emily from rehab. What did I call you, like 4 or 5 times a week?
Yeah. And you would always call me, you would like be in an art class looking at the ocean and you would call me from your stolen cell phone.
Oh, I would cut the art class. Yeah. We had art class at rehab. I didn't go to that.
Yeah.
I missed that one. But, the rehab changed my life, and Emily's really been this is a professional relationship and everything as well as we did this interview, but I would tell your audience, Emily is very sweet and a very good friend and very supportive.
Sam, I'll put your check in the mail after we end this episode. No, I think that I've known you for years now, and you are always someone that I go to when I need a temperature check about anything that's happening in the White House or in the political world. And I'm so grateful that our audience gets to hear what I get to hear on a daily basis from you. So thank you for publicly having this conversation with me. I'm sure that I will talk to you privately about all this, and I'll bring all of your good know-how to our audience going forward. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Sam.
Congratulations on the podcast.
Thank you to my guest, Sam Nunberg, and of course, Joe Hagan, my co-host. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of Inside the Hive. You can find these on Apple Podcasts, radio.com, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you're there. Thank you to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work. And thanks, of course, to my sponsors. Please support them the way you support this podcast. We'll see you next week.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.